coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. I'm on vacation, but we'd love to do the show anyway. Chris Tobin is here, and our guest is Rich Parker. He's at Coast Alaska, been all up and down the peninsula of Alaska, installing studios, fixing studios, installing FM stations. We're going to hear about the time that he almost missed his flight because he was fixing a satellite dish. It's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By the Ruby Console from Lavo, see Lavo and your future at lavo.com/twert. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from this microphone this week to the light bulb at the top of the tower and a lot of stuff in between. And Rich Parker has been on the show before, but he's our guest again for today. Now, you may notice that I'm not in my usual abode in the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm on the road again this week. On the road again. I'm in Virginia. We're on a little vacation here, and I persuaded the wife and the kid, hey, Daddy's going to take about an hour and a half off to do a show again. So they said, we're going to go have some fun. You do whatever you do, that you do that techie geeky stuff yourself. So that's what I'm doing. I'm out here on the porch overlooking a golf course and the beautiful mountains of South Central Virginia. And it's just a gorgeous day here. So that's what's happening in my part of the world. I want to remind you, I do work for the folks at the Telos Alliance. So if I say nice things about them or talk somewhat authoritatively about the equipment that they make and the technologies they use, well, there's a reason for that. I'm kind of familiar with it. So get that disclaimer out of the way. My co-host is here. He just showed up a few minutes ago, and that's Chris Tobin. Chris, welcome into the show. How are you today, buddy?
I'm doing well. All is good. I'm not vacationing like you, though. But the weather's nice, and what the heck? You know, it's one of those days. It's good.
It's a gorgeous day here. It was kind of crummy yesterday. It kind of drizzled all day. I tried to do some hiking, but that wasn't so good. We visited Washington, D.C. We went to the National Mall. We went to the National Zoo. We went to the Lincoln Memorial. We stopped by for a quick photo op in front of the White House. Had a great time tooling around. Oh, saw the World War II Memorial, too. That's pretty pretty interesting, very meaningful. And first time, I think my son's been there before. He's 8 years old now, and so it was a bit more meaningful for him. He read every word of the Gettysburg Address on the wall inside the Lincoln Memorial. That was cool. Hey, that other voice that's peeking in from time to time, that is Rich Parker from Juneau, Alaska. Rich, welcome in. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. And I was telling your producer I had to put up a piece of cardboard over the window. It is stunningly bright blue and beautiful here today, which is really rare. So I think after we're done, I'm going to go out for a walk.
How unusual. Well, you're way out there in Juneau. Is Alaska all one time zone or is it a couple?
It is. There's been a lot of history around that. Tried to make them different, try to separate it. But I won't bore you with it, but you know, you look at one of those maps of Alaska laid across the United States, and it just goes from Florida to Washington State. It's huge, and it's sometimes it's confusing. So I had a visit to a site in Alaska, which is, it's hard to explain. Dutch Harbor. If people have ever watched that crazy show, The Most Dangerous Catch, that was filmed in Dutch Harbor, yeah. And Alaska is just right across the bridge from that on another island. That's where one of our stations is. And I can tell you that it was very weird being there because you felt like you were two or three time zones away, but it was the same time, you know, so it was like, like 10 o'clock at night, it was like brilliantly bright. And I'm not talking about in the summertime. I'm talking about like in the winter, you know, maybe 9 o'clock, it was still light. It's more like being Hawaii time almost, you know, it's probably share a time zone with Don Muscle or something. I don't know. Maybe it's
quite weird. You might. Yeah.
It's very strange. Well, but yeah.
And fans of our show will understand that reference. Don Mussel, an engineer in Hawaii, and he and I've gotten to work together. He's been on the show as well. So Rich has been on the show a couple times, and Rich is going to be updating us on what has been happening at Coast Alaska. Rich has been there a good couple of years now or more, being the director of engineering for Coast Alaska. This is a whole chain of FM stations, and we're going to find out. We're going to get the elevator speech about where they cover and how many transmitters they have and all that in just a minute. Our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by the folks at Broadcasters General Store. I got to encourage you to call these folks, order from them, buy from them. You need broadcast gear, give them a call or go to their website at bgs.cc. And one of their vendors, one of the people who they represent, is Vox Pro. Let's check it out now.
Yo, what's up? Live from NAB 2018. Hey, it's Caden. You need to check out Wheatstone and Vox Pro 7.1. The upgrades are amazing. If you're a jock, if you're a talent, producer, whatever, morning show, everyone knows Vox Pro. Everyone uses Vox Pro. Everyone loves Vox Pro. But now the features for this year, 2018, on 7.1 are amazing. If you're using version 4, 5, 6, and you go to 7, this is exactly what you're missing right here. The features are a game changer. It's going to cut down your editing time by like 80%, depending on what you use Vox Pro for. And with version 7.1, introducing unlimited practic button bars right here, hotkeys right here. I'm going to show you coming out of a song.
Bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wish and they wish and they wish and they wish.
So you're coming out of your song?
Yeah.
Start your next song right here. It's basically an entire production room right on Vox Pro. So it's the Vox Pro we know and love with a ton more features. And now this is the ultimate game changer right here, effect macros. So instead of hitting your effects button bar and going up here using your mouse for every effect, you do it right here with one click of the mouse, and you're going to cut down your editing time by about 80% without even touching this new sexy black controller. Check it out right here, Wheatstone Vox Pro 7.1 at NAB in Vegas 2018.
And you know, Vox Pro, man, that's what all the pros like. That's why it's called Vox Pro, for editing phone calls, but also for editing quick in-studio items, too. So check it out. You can get the controller and the software from Broadcasters General Store. They will give you a deal. If you want a deal, you call them and say, I want a deal. Put your sharpest pencil on this. And they'll absolutely cut that price to the bone. Good folks there at Broadcasters General Store. You can give them a call. I've got the number memorized. It's 352-622-7700. You know, that these days we don't memorize many numbers. We typically click on a link or go to our Rolodex on the inside the phone. 352-622-7700 or easy website at bgs.cc. Thanks a lot, Broadcasters General Store, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Okay, it's Kirk Harnack and Chris Tobin, and Rich Parker is along with us right now. Hey, we can all unmute now and get back to audio. Rich, hey, give us the little elevator speech. What is Coast Alaska? I know it's been a couple of years since you've said so on our station, so plenty of people haven't heard or on our show. What's Coast Alaska?
Coast Alaska is a consortium of six radio stations. I didn't put this down. Sorry, I got excited in that thing. I wanted to say I had his grandfather here.
How about that?
Anyway, I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So I had to take that away from one of the producers. They wouldn't give it up. Anyway, sorry. So Coast Alaska is a consortium of stations that was formed, I want to say, back in the 80s, maybe. During one of the first real serious budget crises in Alaska. And there were engineers, you might have known some of them, Chuck Lucatus and Matt Holmes, a whole bunch of people that were here, and names and names and names and names, and they just got everything back. And what they ended up doing was the stations remain independent. They have their own boards of directors. They own their own equipment. They have their licenses. But what they did is they got together in this consortium called Coast Alaska, which here in Juneau is where the biggest center of Coast Alaska is. So we have the finance, personnel, accounting, well, I guess that's finance, and engineering all come through this office here. So what that means is they don't need to have a back-end finance person, a back-end personnel person, a back-end, and there's even a regional development director, though each station does have development people that do underwriting, sales, and that kind of stuff. So that's what that is. We just recently added Unalaska, which is, as I said, way out on the Aleutians. It's Dutch Harbor, I guess, is what, you know, most people know because of the show Deadliest Catch on Alaska. It's just across a little bridge to the next island. And so those are, and then we support just not engineering, but just the financial part and the personnel back office stuff. We have stations in, I think, I want to say Dillingham and Barrow, but I could be wrong. Utqavik, not Barrow anymore. But anyway, so that's what we are, and we're trying to stay alive. The state budget keeps getting cut. We're going to have to see what's going to happen, you know, in the next year. The governor, the current governor is, not getting too political. He's the senator who every single year wanted to zero out state funding for any kind of public broadcasting. And that included, the statewide satellite system, the statewide TV system, a lot of things that we depend on. So we're right now in discussions with, okay, if he kills it all, how do we keep our stations connected? We've got three stations with tie lines. We've got some, barracks boxes. We've got some different things that we might be able to kind of keep things hooked up. The news departments are quite lucky in that the bulk of them are in Juneau are supported by CPB grants for something that's called the Energy Desk. So that's not really part of Coast Alaska, but we serve all of those people with equipment, help them with their hardware and that kind of stuff. And I've been here since 2014, so it's hard to believe 5 years has come and gone.
Wow, 5 years. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
And you've caught some fish. You've caught some fish in that time.
I have and eaten several, yes.
Chris, well, you know, go ahead, Rich.
Well, I was going to say the joke here is I have pictures of the grocery shelves like empty because the barge didn't show and there's no produce, but I have a freezer full of fish and shrimp, so it balances out.
Wow. Chris, you know, I live in a suburban area, and Chris lives in the middle of the biggest city in the U.S. in terms of, you know, the market size, the number one. So, Chris, it's hard to imagine the life that Rich lives, and going to the grocery store and the produce boat didn't show up, but you've got a freezer full of salmon and shrimp. What do you think that'd be like, Chris? Different than what you and I
think it'd be fun. I mean, it makes you think twice. It makes you prepare for stuff, and you know, you don't take anything for granted. I think it's great. When I used to travel for a news agency, and we used to go to places where there was disaster happening, and you know, empty shelves was a common practice, and we're like, "Whoa, now what do we do?" So you learn to prepare for these things. So it's pretty cool.
And you said, Chris, a couple times there, prepare. And I want to ask Rich now, move to the technicalities of things. Tell me about, Rich, how many transmitter sites do you either personally take care of or oversee somebody else taking care of? You know, what are you responsible for?
So I'm responsible for the six sites, basically, here. So we have KCAW in Ketchikan. That's at the far southern tip of the peninsula, I guess you call it. Then coming up at the peninsula is Wrangell and then Petersburg. And then across the channels and across the mountains is Sitka. And then Juneau has three stations, KTO, Karen and KXLL, which I believe you're very familiar with. You and Larry Foss were involved, I think, with Karen and KXLL when they were, I forget what they were back in the day, but different call signs, which we're now moving. And then Unalaska, and I flew out to Unalaska and helped out. So I'm responsible for the transmitters, the transmission, the STLs, the studios. I have a partner, a cohort, who's in Sitka now, who's our IT director, and he tries to take a lot of the load off of people's desktop computers, sometimes pitches in a lot now with Audio Vault. He's coming really up to speed with learning some of the Audio Vault stuff. We've got satellite downlinks, receivers. Yeah, the whole gamut.
So is it the case that you do some programming that runs on all these stations and then other programming the local studios take over? Kind of what's the picture there as far as the programming origination and distribution?
So they're all responsible for their own programming. We don't do anything for them. I mean, we'll help them, you know, get things done. But each station has a manager, has a program director or news director or, you know, someone of that ilk and a lot of volunteers. So I would say you could divide it up into a lot of NPR. So there's the, you know, the morning edition and the afternoon show, all things considered. There's some classical shows. There's things that come off of PRX, which are pulled as files through FTP. There are some, there's certainly files from NPR because, like, for instance, Marketplace plays here at 6:30 at night. It plays 6:30 on the East Coast, too. But our feed of Marketplace is usually the show that was recorded at, like, 4 our time or something like that. Fresh Air the same way. It runs at 2 o'clock here. So there's, you know, there's some differences, but they take care of their own programming. There's also a statewide network. It's called APRN. I think it's Alaska Public Radio Network. It originates in Anchorage, and it does a show a couple times a day. There's a long show, Talk of Alaska. There's the Fisheries Report. There's a number of shows. And the stations tend to air those as well, although they can, again, some of them take it live, some of them store and forward. But those are important shows that people do like. So that's kind of, I mean, with this, you know, I hate to even think about it, but with some of the upcoming budget cuts, and it's going to be some real crises, we're looking at, for instance, things like virtualizing Audio Vault, which they finally say they will support. Mm-hmm. And then trying to use something like the Natural Log and AV Scheduler. And we might end up having like a regional program director who takes input. I mean, this is all speculative. Input from the stations, lines their programs up according to what they want, and then they can push that out as schedules and things. I mean, there's a lot of different things we're talking about. We're not really sure how it's going to work. If we lose, for instance, the statewide satellite network, which is funded by the government, that's what's called the ARCS, Alaska Radio Rural Communication Service, I think, something like that. It provides, right now, there's an upgrade where they did a bunch of digital TV, so they can provide 3 or 4 channels of TV to rural areas. And alongside those, they can also carry a couple of 3 radio signals. So a lot of our stations, like, for instance, Ketchikan has translators all over Prince of Wales Island at the small communities, Klawak and Craig and Heidelberg and some of those. Sitka has a bunch of translators in Cake and in Yucatat and just, you know, all over the place. And those are all communities that have ARCS television. And so because they have the satellite receivers and the downlink there, they're also able to pull off the audio stream on the channel that's assigned to them and put that into translators. So if, you know, we're really facing a crisis, if that satellite system goes away, we're not going to have radio in some of these small communities. And in some of these places, public radio is the only service. That's not true in Juneau, and it's not true in Ketchikan or Sitka. But the other places, there's no other services. I take that back. In Unalaska, somebody just filed for these very strange repeaters up in Unalaska, low power, of repeating some content from Lower 48 or something. But as far as local news and coverage and things of interest, it's going to be tough. I don't know what they're going to do. We're going to try to figure out how to keep it going.
I've got so many questions, and I'm sure Chris has some too.
That's okay.
One thing I'm curious about, when I was in Juneau many, many years ago and helped to build a studio for the 2 FMs that you mentioned earlier, and I guess those were acquired then by Coast Alaska, yeah? These commercial stations?
They were acquired by KTOO, actually.
Okay. So
this is like weird because KTOO is a member of Coast Alaska, but it's actually the KTOO acquired those. Yeah.
Okay. I recall that being in Alaska, and you're not even really high up in Alaska. You're in Juneau. It's just partway up the little peninsula. That the satellite dishes for commercial services were, you know, very much pointed, you know, down near the horizon. And that just made me think, you mentioned this, these other services that people can get, RX Alaska. And is this, are those dishes similarly pointed just down near the horizon? I guess they would have to be if they're equatorial orbit satellites.
They are. Yeah. Yeah. There's places in Alaska where they can only get AMC-8, you know, and it's pointed fairly down. I mean, if you really wanted to see a satellite dish pointed down, you go to KOTZ where Pierre Lone Wolf is and look at some of those. I think if I remember correctly, Pierre was saying something about having an offset Portland dish that he was heading upside down, actually.
Right,
you know,
right.
To do that. And if a school bus drives in front of it, you're in big trouble. So, yeah. So, you know. Yeah, you know. Yeah, so.
Yeah, my,
I mean, down you know, here you asked, you asked about,
yeah.
Yeah. Good. Well, the other sort of funny thing about satellite dishes is there was a pretty good story. I'm trying to find it. There was a pretty good story about how we lost the downlink in Petersburg. This was many years ago. It was before I came, and they couldn't figure out what it was, and the signal kept getting lower and lower and lower. They finally went out and they found out that the ravens had pecked through the plastic on the feed horn, and they were stuffing dead fish in there to store it. And eventually it filled up with dead fish, and they lost their satellite. It was not fun. What I understand, it was not fun cleaning it out, but anyway.
You know, usually here in the lower 48, the problem is wasps getting in the feed horn, paper wasps, right? And building a paper nest in the feed horn. Mm-hmm. And so, Chris, you've experienced this, I'm sure. You know, during the day, in the heat of the day, most of the wasps are out doing whatever wasps do. And so and the paper is fairly dry. But overnight, as moisture gets into that paper wasp nest and all the wasps are home at night, the satellite signal starts getting terrible. And when that would happen, I would kind of know, you know what? There's probably a paper wasp. Probably the piece of plastic that covered the feed horn has disintegrated or rotted or whatever. And sure enough, I go out there, that's what happened. I need to go get some new ones. And at the same time, clear the paper wasp out. So you'd stand about as far back as you could and see end up in there with your squirter, you know, and you'd squirt wasp spray. Chris, have you got the same thing, or what seasonal satellite do you have in New York?
No fish in the feed horn, but definitely definitely wasps. What did we have once before? No, that was it. Yeah, just the little flyers. That was it. Yeah, it was always fun trying to diagnose the problem when people are reporting satellite outages at the studios. You're like, okay, it's not following a pattern. Darn it. And they have to go out to the transmitter site and you look up and like, everything looks normal. And then you get up on a ladder and you go, oh, forget it. I just shouldn't have done that. And then they start whizzing around.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So right, go ahead. Well, I can say if you're wants to bring up... I sent him the last link the Google Photos, it's YG, starts with YG. That's got some pictures in Ketchikan, and that's one of the furthest south dishes. And you can tell that it's still pointed pretty low.
Let's take a look at that. If Suncast can get to that one, that last link that was sent, we'll take a look at those pictures.
Just for comparison, the one from Unalaska, which is way out in the Aleutian, starts with the HVC. So you can get a sense of, you know, just what, you know, kind of the variation. I mean, it's almost 800 miles to Anchorage from here. And it's, I want to say, about 1,000 miles from Anchorage to Unalaska. It's pretty big.
Suncast is asking which photo of that group that you asked for, the YG.
Oh, sorry. Well, I think that there's the first three are just pictures of the satellite dish, so it doesn't matter.
Okay. We'll see if we can take a look at that.
Maybe the third one's a good profile, you know, but sorry.
But, you know, almost no matter where you are in the world, and we'll just vamp until the pictures come up, there is some kind of satellite dish problem that's germane to your region. You know, if you're on the equator, your dishes are pointed straight up, and you got to make sure you drill a hole or have a hole in the bottom for water to drain out. Otherwise, it changes the geometry of the dish. That's one problem, and I've seen that before. And you know what, Rich? You said that you're picking up AMC-8. That's you know, typically known as the radio satellite or has been for years. I think a lot of them have moved now. I know we recently moved to a couple of years ago, we moved to a different main satellite. A lot of the networks did. But AMC-8's way over west, almost over the international dateline, not quite, but close. Mm-hmm. And I had a situation in American Samoa. We really wanted to pick up live satellite radio, you know, to put local news, I mean, put live news on our station in American Samoa. And we wondered, can we get any signal here? Because there's not a spot beam for American Samoa. There is for Hawaii. And then Alaska gets hit reasonably well. And then, of course, most of the power goes to the mainland. And we were able to borrow the use of an 11-meter dish in American Samoa. And I'll finish the story here in 10 seconds. We pointed the dish at AMC 8, and there was like literally 1 dB of carrier to noise ratio.
Oh my gosh.
It was proving that directional antennas do work. All right, what's this? Well, what were we looking at there? Let's see that picture again.
That's okay. So that's actually KUCB. That's fine. That's on Alaska, and that's up on top of a hill. There's a TV station. There's Wi-Fi. There's FM. Mm-hmm. There used to be a satellite dish there, but the winds are in the imagine Mount Washington kind of type winds on this little island, and it just I don't think they ever found it actually. So that's actually down by the station. No, serious. So it's actually down by the station. And I apologize. In this sequence, there's pictures of the station, but I don't see any pictures of the dish. But the point is that there's quite a bit of they had a point pretty low. But you know, in Alaska, that's under the double eagle, I think, or under the single eagle, I guess, is what that is. So. That is an eagle on top of the communications tower up there. And those Yagis, I believe, are for the local TV station, the Channel 8 there. So
I see what looks like some Ubiquiti brand dual dishes there. Is a lot of unlicensed stuff used there?
There is, but it's not terribly crowded. There's a couple of ISPs that are there. And that's what I was telling you, I think, before. I wish I had a shot of it. I have a card. Do you remember the old long-distance cards you used to have to get? You'd scratch off, and there'd be a number, and then you'd enter that in to get long-distance service, right?
Right.
So they have the same cards in Alaska. The company's called Optima, and you get these cards, and they're like the same size as a little credit card. They have a scratch-off on the back. And when you scratch it off, it's your Wi-Fi password. So they have pretty good Wi-Fi all over town. But that card is $25 for 1 gig of data.
Oh, gee, many Christmas. Oh, yeah, wow.
That's pretty rough.
That's
so, expensive. And not to be too scatological here, but I took a picture of a, and I don't have it here, but I took a picture of a small convenience store. It's the first time I'd ever seen in 20 years, maybe, an entire rack of pornographic magazines, like actual paper. Because nobody has enough internet to download. I mean, went away like years ago.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm like, oh my God, there's an entire rack in the store of girly magazines. That's just an example of, I thought was funny, of the fact that the internet's just really, really expensive there.
Well, it sounds a bit like it's interesting how different things play out. But I've heard that in Cuba, where internet is really hard to find, except in the capital, people will burn a whole bunch of new information to a thumb drive, and they'll take those out to the towns and they'll pass the thumb drive around with the news and some movies and some videos, and that's the internet in Cuba. Yep. Now, Rich, here's when I was in Alaska some years ago, I was told that Alaskan internet infrastructure was really good because a lot of money had been spent on it to connect all these towns. And what you're telling me is it's not that good, or maybe it just misses a lot of little towns. What's the story on publicly available internet?
Yeah, so there's some pretty good maps. You can go online and these broadband maps that tell you. It is real hit and miss. I mean, certainly in Southeast, we've been very lucky. There's a major company, GCI, and another one, ACS. And what they've done is there's actually now fiber to some of these communities. Really, I mean, I can get 100 meg circuits for the stations fairly reasonably. And that would be in Sitka, Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, of course, Juneau. Unalaska's out, kind of an outlier. It doesn't, there's a station in Galena that, they have to use Exceed or what's the other company? But some of these like small aperture KU or KA band dishes, and it's not cheap. Yeah. But your point is well taken about the thumb drive. I used to have friends who were missionaries in way in the interior of Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, actually. And so what we would do is we would send things to them, which they would then pick up at the post office in Port Moresby and, and burn onto thumb drives and then bring it back home. So that's a fairly common thing in some places. And by the way, I have to say that, for the price, ahead. Well, I was going to say, for the price, you know, now I can buy a terabyte mini drive as big as my thumbnail and put it in an envelope and probably transfer that much data to Unalaska on an airplane faster than I could send it to them over the internet. So, well, you know, so for program distribution and stuff like that, you remember when we used to get the tapes on the bus?
Oh, yes.
You know, and then you have to make sure they were tails out, and you put them back in the plastic box, and you take them back to the bus station.
Yes.
And it, you know, and some, you know, for a quiet corner, here's a little music for a quiet corner of the evening. You know, this is the WFMT Fine Arts Network. You know, used to get all those tapes, and you can now do that by mail or by plane quite efficiently. So it's as long as it doesn't have to be live. I remember in Juneau, I think when you were in Juneau, if I'm not mistaken, didn't they fly Super Bowl tapes up like the day or two after and then broadcast them? Or was that before you were there? But
I don't know. I know in American Samoa, they have the Armed Forces television and the local public TV station has an agreement with Armed Forces that they can rebroadcast certain things or all the things that they want to from Armed Forces. It's cool. So, you know, we've got that satellite network, but obviously your stations aren't able to pick stuff up from that unless maybe some national emergency or something.
Yeah. I mean, ARX is the closest thing we have to that. They can cherry pick different programs, everything from, you know, Dolly for Dollars to Bingo. And that goes up on the ARC system out of Fairbanks. So they have a university there. So they have pretty good, you know, internet and stuff. So, yeah, it's hard to explain how big it is here and how wide and what the distances are. You know, that satellite dish in Ketchikan, we were starting to get some really severe C-band interference, and we thought maybe somebody put up a WiMAX or something. We weren't really sure. So my first thing was to order a C-band filter, which very fortunately, because of our membership and downlink agreements and everything with NPR, they were able to send us. And I said, please send it, you know, priority mail if you can, but they sent it, I think they sent it UPS. Anyway, I was there all week waiting for this thing. And I went to the UPS one time, and there was a sign on the door saying, we're really sorry. Everybody is at the airport right now. The shipments were delayed. We're trying to sort it out. We're trying to get everything delivered. Anyway, long story short, they delivered that C-band filter to me at noon, and I had a flight out at 8:30 that night.
Oh.
And to get that flight, I had to be there early with 150 pounds of tools, you know, my carry stuff that I bring. I get three bags, and that's one nice thing about Alaska Air. If you're an Alaska resident, you jump – join Club 49 and you get three 50-pound bags. So that's how I do my tools. But you have to get there. You know, you've heard of the Bridge to Nowhere, right? That was the big scandal back in the day that they were accusing. Well, the Bridge to Nowhere was not a Bridge to Nowhere. It's a bridge to the airport, like in a major island. You know, I mean, it's like, so now you have to take a ferry to get to the airport from Ketchikan. So I had to leave, you know, I probably had to leave at, you know, 6, you know, really cutting it close, 6:30. I had to see my hand at 12:30. I'm up on a ladder, you know, trying to replace this C-band filter. I found a new feed horn, and I thought, you know, it was in a box. I said, this is brand new. I mean, if I'm taking this apart, let's just do it all. Put it back on. It did reduce, you know, did some ASL tweaks and, you know, checked the polarization and all that. And there was still some interference. It's weird with that kind of interference because what happens is you go, well, I've got really good signal, but the signal and noise is terrible. You know, and that's kind of the definition of it. A little funny part of that, I did get it installed, and we got it working before I left. I even had time to catch a little dinner. But a sort of a funny thing about that is I'm looking at the spectrum analyzer, and all of a sudden, I see this, like, carrier pop up, like, right next to the NPR carrier. And I'm like, holy crap, what is this? Now what? So this is, I'm pulling my hair out. I call NPR. I go, what is it? Oh, yeah, we didn't tell anybody. This is our alternate carrier that we're going to be testing for the new system, and we just put it up yesterday. I go, guys, you're killing me. I'm trying to find C-band interference right below your carrier, and you guys popped up this big carrier in the morning. And I'm like, you know, a little heads up would have been nice, you know.
Like, yeah.
Because here I am trying to fight this. I mean, like, what is this? Where is it coming from? Is this a new interference?
Right.
And gosh, it just looks like a double illumination or something. Well, you know, they were like, oh, we're sorry. We didn't think anybody would notice. I'm like, well, yeah. I've got screenshots to show it on the spectrum analyzer. But, yeah. So that was just, you know, it was just like icing on the cake there. But, you know, I found out there's other things, Kirk. That dish was installed years ago. I can't even remember. And it was like, I swear it was like RG59 for like 100 feet.
Oh,
you know, off, you know, and it was just things like that. I was just like, oh my God, you know. So I've got the crew. I told them what they need to, you know, do RG11 or even, gosh, even RG8 or something, you know, a quad flex or something. Get it, you know, get that replaced. And we'll keep working on the TI and all that kind of stuff. So that's the kind of thing. I mean, we literally had the development director out there on a ladder washing the dish, you know, because it would get a lot of moss, I guess, you know, algae and moss would grow on the dish. And you know, we clean that off and you get a dB or two of increase by just getting all that moss and stuff off the dish. So that's, I know it sounds crazy, but that's the kind of stuff that we, you know, we deal with. So
we could do a whole show on satellite transmit and receive issues because Chris used to work at ABC Satellite Services. And we could talk about that. Hey, we got to take a quick break here. We're talking to Rich Parker. Rich is the director of engineering for Coast Alaska in Juneau, Alaska. But he's all up and down the coast there taking care of translators and FM stations and studios. We'll talk more about that coming up. Chris Tobin is along here in New York, and we're just listening to the adventures that Rich puts up with and makes for himself in Alaska. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 447, is brought to you by our friends at Calrec and Angry Audio. Be right back.
Type R is Calrec's first native IP-based mixing console. It is fully AES-67 and NMOS ISO-4 and ISO-5 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110. Connectivity via Cat5e utilizing COT switches and power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches to minimize cabling. Its 2U core has integrated I/O, so you're instantly up and running, and it can power up to 3 independent mixing environments, each with their own separate DSP resources. Type R's surface is modular and expandable, consisting of 3 slimline panels, each of which are user-definable with layouts saved and recalled quickly between shows. It's available in 4 DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, making Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks a lot to Calrec for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, and do go to that website, calrec.com/twert. Hey, studio guests are only human, and humans, you know, they cough and sniff and clear their throats, even on the air. You can cure this with the Angry Audio Guest Gizmo. Press the cough button. Mute the mic. Every guest needs one of these. Really. You know what else guests need? That's headphones. Which is why each guest gizmo also has a studio-quality headphone amp with individual volume control. Anything else? Well, you've seen those mic arms with the built-in LEDs. They're beautiful, but how do you light them up? The Guest Gizmo does that too, illuminating the red LED light whenever the mic is hot. And installing the Guest Gizmo in your studio furniture could not be easier. You just need a 2 3/4 inch hole saw and a steady hand. No router required. Your studio gets a clean, custom appearance, and you get all the credit. Check out the Guest Gizmo and all the other cool gadgets at angryaudio.com. That's angryaudio.com. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I was just talking to the owner and founder of angryaudio.com today, and we've got some cool things coming up, so you'll want to stay tuned. Visit angryaudio.com often, see what they have new And we're going to probably have a contest or some kind of giveaway coming up in a month or so. So I'm excited about that. All right. It's This Week in Radio Tech with Kirk Harnack, Chris Tobin, and Rich Parker here. Episode number 447. Rich has been on before. You know, Rich used to be at Vermont Public Radio and then moved to Alaska to take on an incredible new adventure there. And so we're just catching up with Rich. You know, hey, I'm at a resort this week. You know, life is kind of easy here. And I know life isn't always easy in the big city. Where Chris Tobin is, but you know, it's a different kind of challenge. Rich has got some interesting challenges, and some that we'd like to think, you know, as we'd like to think we could handle. But I'm just not sure that everybody could. Rich, I want to ask you what's been just one of the craziest things? Has there been a situation you said, I don't know if I can get through this. I don't know if I'm physically capable, mentally capable, if I've got the tools. I don't know if I'm going to get blown off this ship, or is this airplane going to land, or am I going to make it traipsing up to the top of this mountain to the site? What's been something that you weren't sure about?
Oh man. You know, I kind of feel like I've been doing this for way too long, 35 or more, I don't know, years. And I feel like almost every day there's something I look at and I go, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? You know, because I mean, it could be everything from trying to resurrect a distribution amp by pulling off a surface mount cap and trying to gently get it back on because I don't have the time or money to get a new one, or, you know, hiking up is not bad. I'm getting up there, but I take my walking sticks and I still make it to the top of some of these sites. You know, and I've not thankfully had any direct confrontations, although I have been on that trail of Peterson Hill, which is above the airport, and looked down and seen footprints in the snow that went across the trail. And I go, yeah, buddy, that is not a dog. That's a wolf right there. You know?
Oh, a wolf. Okay.
But, you know, and we have, we have bears in my neighborhood, and there's bears at the site sometimes. I think I told you maybe in one of our last shows, we went up on a helicopter in a pretty high site and a pretty small area. And the helicopter pilot went around the top of the mountain once. And I said, what's this? He goes, oh, bear chuck. He wanted to make sure there were no bears, you know, lounging around on the landing pad or at the pond before he set the helicopter down.
Bear check.
But, you know, a lot of it too is like, I don't know, it's technical stuff. It's, I don't know. I mean, one of the gnarliest ones is we still have these BE5s, BE3 transmitters, FM3s, and FM5s at a lot of sites. And we lost an exciter at one, and there was a couple in an attic, and, you know, and I had them ship them back here. And I was like, basically, it was like, I think it's what, you know, people really used to do a lot more of in the old days, but it was, okay, can I pull this piece out of this one and put this together and resolder this and put this back in and tune it and test it and get this thing back and get them back on the air? You know, meanwhile, they're running at lower power with a, you know, borrowed crown as an exciter. You know, so it's that kind of stuff where you just go, man, I've just got to improvise. I've got to figure this out. And it's challenging, but I guess it's kind of part of what makes the job fun for me. It's, you know, can we do this? Can we make this work? On a more modern scale, I think, you know, we're moving KXL on Caravan up to Ock Mountain, and it's a helicopter ride up. It's a long ways up. They're getting the tower together. Big Jampro antennas, panel antennas, and I've got two Nautel VS-300s up there, which have LiveWire ports. And I'm kind of making this, like, Hail Mary decision. We're running tight on a budget, and for me to get two pair of codecs, you know, decent ones that I'm used to using, Comrex or APT Silvers or something like that, you know, we're talking $4,000 or $5,000. And then we're going to move K2 up there again. And so now we're talking like $6,000-$8,000 maybe for these codecs. And, you know, I'm taking a big risk, but the landlord is a wisp. And he said, oh, I've got these Mimosa radios. I can get 100 or 200 meg up there. If you want a 50 meg pipe or 25 meg pipe, that's fine. We can do it. So I have, you talk about VGS. I've got, you know, it's really funny. I mean, I love these guys, Hugh and Buck, and all. I must have like 20 of these in my bin, you know, of these purchase orders, you know, from them. They're the greatest. They really are. And I've got an X node, an AES X node coming pretty soon. and we're gonna try it. I'm gonna try to send that out of that X node up the radio and directly into the VS300s. And I, you know, it's a belt and suspenders thing because I also ordered two pair of Barracks boxes, you know, Barracks 100s, just yeah. because. You know, it's like you just never know, and it's always good to have the end goal there is that actually they're going to have an ISP, a different one, not them, come up this cable that comes up the mountain that they laid this year, and I'll probably use that as like an alternate, you know, alternate path for the Barracks boxes. But that's a goal. I mean, I want to see how it works. I'm really excited about trying the X node. Not to be too much of a commercial for Axia, but this AES X node, what I've got is a three stations here, and I've got one of those that hooks into my DASDEC. I've got a what you call it? It's a multi-station relay panel. It's only got AES inputs and outputs. That's it. Right?
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I need to figure out how to get the AES up to the site. So and the thing is that right now what I've got is the digital outputs from the Orband processors that are here feeding into that, and then the digital outs are going directly into the digital inputs of the Mosley Starlinks, right? If you can sort of picture that. Okay, so now what? I've got to send this thing up to the mountain. So my vision here is to take the AES X node and put it on the network, right, on our LiveWire network. Now I'm going to take the AES outputs, the four AES outputs, and put those into the multi-station panel, and then take the AES outputs of the multi-station panel, put it back into the X node. Now I've got audio from the stations passing through the multiplayer, so now I have EAS on those channels. Then those, I'll mark those with a particular livecast stream channel, and those will be the ones that will go up to the transmitters. But the beauty of that is that now, this has been a problem. We haven't really had a good, easy way for the operators to listen to EAS as it goes off. They can listen off the air, but this will mean now we can have the EAS channel come up in a studio. They can put it in queue, listen. Yep, it did fire. There it is. Now let's go to air. There it is. And, you know, X node, I mean, God bless Hugh. I don't think it's okay. I think it's okay to say this. I think I got about, let's just say, several hundred dollars below list price for an X node. Let's just say that. And let's just say it's around $1,500, $1,600. For me to buy four A to D converters, in other words, A to D, D to A, A to D, D to A, to go back to the, that's just for two of the stations. That was just $3,000, right? And then I had the third station. Now we're talking about $4,500. And I'm talking decent quality A to D converters, not cheap stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, now I've got an X node that's $1,500, $1,700, which is a four-channel A to D converter in the sense that because I've already got, it comes into the LiveWire network. Once it's on the LiveWire, now it doesn't care if it's AES or whatever it is. I can take it out of an analog X node. And now I've got an A to D converter or a D to A converter. So it's quite a beautiful system. So, you know, anyway, thanks you guys for doing that.
Well, what you're discovering is happens to be what I discovered. There's so much serendipity with audio over IP. Of course, I'm familiar with Axia LiveWire, but I would suppose this applies to about anybody else's. And that is that you find out, you start getting audio sources or points on the network, and you said people couldn't monitor unless they were listening off the air, but at my little stations in Mississippi and Hawaii and in American Samoa, we can listen to the post EAS feed, which is, by the way, what we also feed into our streaming devices, because the majority owner, the partner, wants to hear post EAS on the streaming service, so we can make sure that the EAS is ran. But that also is what feeds to the transmitter sites over an IP link, and we can listen to that reinsertion point post EAS on the network. But we can also listen to it go to the transmitter site over the IP radio and come back. So we happen to have our audio processors at the transmitter site right now, LiveWire going there, LiveWire coming back. So we can listen to post EAS, but pre-processor, post EAS, post-processor, and of course we can listen off the air, although we've occasionally had some trouble with the external and outdoor antenna. But the point is there, we got lots of ways to find out, where's the fault? Because we can listen at these different points.
And that's a really one of the one of the best things about, you know, the audio over IP revolution. I mean, and it is a little bit agnostic, not quite, but, you know, I've got a TV console downstairs. It's a Logitech Mosaic. And it took a lot of magic and a lot of help from Axia support. But we can get those sources up in the radio studio and they can get our sources down there. You know, so it's getting there. I think we're really moving into a wonderful. And part of the thing, too, is as we get more bandwidth. Look, I you know, people say, how old are you? I'm old enough to remember sitting in a room where people were talking about See You, See Me and streaming. And I'm like, nobody's going to do this on a 14.4 modem. That's just crazy. You know,
I mean,
they did it, but it was like, gee, this is painful. You know, listen, you know, real audio on a 14.4 modem. It was like, yeah, I don't know. But now it's like, you know, it's like similar to going to Costco and I can buy a 6 or 8 terabyte hard drive for $150, you know, and there's bandwidth that when there's bandwidth in places, there's bandwidth and it's really strong and it's a lot. The challenge is, like, as we talked about earlier, is places that don't have bandwidth. But, you know, there's a way you can do it. Our, you know, as you say, our processors are at the station. The VS300s we decided to put Orban inside because the Orban 8500s we have are 10, 12 years old. I know that we're not going to ever have budget to replace, you know, a $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 processor. We're just not anymore. And, you know, so... That was a decision.
You were talking about possibly virtualizing Audio Vault and something to put in your pipe and smoke because it's just this stuff is becoming available now. You could virtualize your audio processors and you could put several of them into one physical server and you could duplicate that server and you could do like me and buy used servers on eBay, but you know, depending on what your budget all is. But you can also do your stereo encoding in that same server and send it out as IP, either as linear multiplex at about 3.5 megabits per second of IP, or this new technology, micro MPX. It's been around for a couple of years, the folks at my employer tell us just introduced a hardware, you know, a box that takes IP in 400 kilobits per second and spits you out composite FM. And that just
I was
right
talking to some of your guys about that on the phone. It's great.
Yeah. And then what's cool about that
about
is
the future. I'm very excited.
Yeah. You know, what's cool about that is that, you know, LiveWire, and I did this 4 years ago at my station in Mississippi. It's cool to shoot linear LiveWire to the transmitter site, but it takes the IP radios have got to be really meticulously set up. And if anything burps, anything goes wrong, you lose a packet, you lose something. Whereas with a lower bit rate, and buffering, you can run that over an off-the-shelf, no configuration IP radio, just or public internet, and this can absolutely work. And then when you have multiple path capability, and internet is getting to where it's so maybe not everywhere where you are, of course, but so cheap in a lot of places that hey, my first connection here to the show didn't work. I'm using this one instead, and it's working fairly well. So, Chris Tobin has been...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say one last thing, and that's... I feel like I've been an evangelist for this, and I can't get anybody except for the people at Sinclair maybe are already ahead of this game, but I see this next wave coming of where people figure out how to put 5G onto TV carriers and use, you know, one-to-many multicasting to take a lot of load off of the cell carriers and not having to build a million towers and maybe even provide some income for the video carriers. Some people in Germany are looking at that. Sinclair has been looking at that. I am absolutely convinced that you could have huge, huge, huge one-way data pipes off of 5G TV, of ATSC3 TV transmitters that, you know, people kind of got burned by Flow TV, but I thought it worked really well when you had it. This is like Flow TV next generation or third generation out. This is going to be, to me, a game changer. And I'm actually, I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I'm fixing to write to some of the people at Microsoft that are doing the white space project and say, hey, did you ever think about coming to Alaska and doing this? We've got statewide television network. We could put ATSC3 on these transmitters and you could feed programs. You could feed educational material, lots of high bandwidth stuff to villages using ATSC3 transmitter. And all you need is a small backhaul, like a phone saying request this or something. Anyway, that's my vision. Yeah, I hope I live long enough to see it, but I just think it's going to be fantastic.
Hey, we're actually getting close to the end of the show, and I want to go out with a bang here. So we're going to break for commercial, our last commercial shortly. Rich, I wonder if you might, in the chat box, let our producer know some of the pictures that you want to see. I know you typed something recently there. Let's go out with looking at some of the other pictures, and you can buzz through them and talk about what we're looking at, because I love to look at these things. Chris Tobin is here. It's Kirk Harnack. We are live with This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, I'm at a resort in Virginia. Chris is in some secret place in New York, and Rich
not so
Parker, not so secret.
Not so
Rich
secret.
Is in Juneau, Alaska. So, Chris, where are you today? Are you at your radio station?
Yeah, I'm at the radio station. Yep, yep. I'm in one of the voice booths. We had a lot of very busy week. A lot of video recordings, musicians in and out, and today we were hosting a podcast workshop from one of the local universities. So I was running between that and getting this set up here for me tonight. So, it's been pretty crazy.
Hey, hang on. We're going to hear from Lavo. And Chris, you and I are going to look at some of these great pictures that Rich is going to supply. We'll be right back after this word from Lavo.
Okay, I'm going
to try. There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual-mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes, and enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lawo.com/twert.
Thanks to Lavo for sponsoring the show. Go to Lavo, lawo.com/twert. It'll take you right to the page with radio stuff. You can skip the million-dollar consoles unless you just want to go see those, and it'll let Lavo know that we sent you here. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin in New York and Rich Parker in Juneau, Alaska. What a wide-ranging geographic show we got today. And I want to see if we can close things out by looking at some pictures. Suncast, hopefully he's got some pictures ready to show to us, and Rich, maybe you're ready to describe what we're looking at. Comment on those.
Let's see what he's got. Sorry, I don't know if there's let me see if I can figure this out.
We saw that one earlier.
Okay. We saw that earlier. There was another link or another link that I sent. That can't be right. Yeah, sorry.
That's a server. But that's not what you're thinking of?
Sorry. No, not really. Sorry.
So we want the link that has it. What you got the wrong link in there?
Yeah, I think it does. It had some studio stuff, some outdoor. Sorry.
Well, Taylor, why don't you double check that link and type it in the chat box, Chris and I can chat just a minute while you're getting that prepped, getting a good link over to Suncast. Maybe we can close out the show with that.
Yeah, that would be good.
So So Chris Tobin, hey, coming up in the next couple of weeks, Chris, I've been able to arrange for a couple of cool guests you're going to like. One of them is a fellow we've had on before, Chris. It's Mark Persons. And Mark's been retired now. Yeah, he's been retired now for a bit.
That'll be great.
But he's got some great thoughts, including a few thoughts on an award that he won from the SPE. The other one, the other fellow that's coming up, he had to get permission from the HR department to be on our show. Imagine that, our show being, you know, I don't know, so Weasley that you got to get permission to be on it. the fellow is an engineer named Jorge Garza from McAllen, Texas, right down near the Mexico border. And Jorge was one of the very first engineers in the world to install an audio over IP console in his studio. And he liked it so much, a few months later, he put it in the second station. And these were, I think one's an FM, but one was a big flame-throwing 50-kilowatt Spanish language station. And I helped him with the first one. And the second station, that he ripped out all the analog console and put in an audio over IP console. It was from Axia. And he wrote me an email a couple of days later. He says, Kirk, it took me twice as long to rip out the old wiring as it did to put the new console in and get it running.
I believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been, I think, 15 years now since Jorge Garza put that in. Jorge also, he liked the technology so much that he ended up doing a bunch of audio over IP talks at SBE meetings. So here we have some pictures. Rich, what do you want to go to here? Oh my gosh, what's that?
Okay, well, this is the boat that I always wanted. This is like a landing craft with treads. I just thought that I'd throw that in there. I was like, didn't you always want one of those? Yeah.
A landing craft
with treads. I'm thinking like, yeah. Okay, this picture here is Bill Laguerre. This is our president, and if you go to the next one, you can see a little better picture of it. This is the cable that they took up reels and they flew it up to the top of Ock Mountain, and they unrolled them one at a time and down and they spliced them. This is a power cable. It's going to be fiber optic and everything else. There was no power to the site. This is an interesting project in that we could we paid for this out of reserves, but what it'll do is, because we paid for the power to go up there, they needed it. A lot of other people up there needed it. We'll get significantly reduced rent for several years. So it was a win-win for everybody. But that's just a gigantic piece of armored cable. The next one, that's not a tool that we use, but it's, I thought it was a cool shot. Anyway, and I'm sorry. This is the antenna that's going to be flown up on the helicopter. It's a big Jam Pro. And you can see there, it's interesting how it's offset like that. Gray Heritage. I don't know if you've had him on the show or not, but he's a fantastic engineer. He helped us design this system for top of Buck Mountain. And basically, the next one is another. Next two are pictures of that. There's in front of our building.
Oh,
just to give you some idea of the scale of that thing. It's huge.
It's huge.
It's just huge. Yeah. There it is. There's me shaking it. And so we went back to, Jampro, and they're going to send us some more braces. This is the combiners that we came from Shively. The combiners, and I've got it all put together. You notice that it's EIA. And so Angela was very nice to go down to the post office one afternoon and send me the EIA to DIN adapter that we forgot to get for this. And
okay.
So, yeah, I know, right? So there's the next shot. Let's see. I'm kind of following along with them. So there they are in the hallway. Now you can see the DIN adapter on the top in the middle there.
Yeah.
And they had a reel of cable. I unrolled the cable and I went out and to the hall. And Jeff Welton will be happy to see that I have got my toroids on.
Ferrite.
Yeah.
Ferrite. Yeah. Ready to go. Right. And I'm getting ready to test it. Everything. This is for Jeff too. I've actually watched the video that came on the thumb drive. If you buy Nautel, there's a little thumb drive right in the very top of the box that says, watch, read me first. And then the next one is just the picture in the hallway. That's, so anyway, and the big wrenches. So that, that was kind of my day. It was like most of over Liberty weekend was doing all this, ringing this out. I won't bore you with the spectrum analyzer shots, but there was some pretty interesting stuff there. So I'm also building, and behind me, you can't really see it, but there's racks and racks of equipment, gator boxes and stuff, and building radio in the box, which is like what we sent down to Puerto Rico. These are emergency broadcast kits. And the folks at NPR were kind of encouraged by this, so they worked with CBB, and they're building some kits that they're going to make available for stations to rent. And I actually kind of borrowed a couple of their ideas. I like one of the masks they used better than what I liked. And so we're kind of, it's kind of a iterative thing, but there's going to be three kits total. I'm going to build one completely next couple of weeks, make sure it has all the pieces and parts that I want. And then once I do, it's going to go up to Anchorage with our engineer up there, and then I'll build the other two. And it's got little things in it that I didn't know I could get before, like a AM, FM, Bluetooth, DVD, CD player, you know, those kind of things, AM, FM receiver. You know, it's, I'm trying to think what, well, it's a, I want to say it's a Denon, but anyway, it's a really nice unit. It's one rack unit, and what I'll do is I'll put that with the the BW600, right, in one small box with a power supply.
Uh-huh.
And then that'll let me be a translator or whatever, or play audio or play off of Bluetooth, off a phone or anything else. Then the other box is going to have kind of production studio in it, there'll be a mast and an antenna. So, you know, it'll be able to – the idea is to make it small and light, so – I had to kind of compromise on cases. Not that I'm against Gator. I'm just saying I get the lighter cases because they're only going to go out once in a great while, right? But they have to go on an airplane, and somebody there has to be able to move them. And so my boss is a very strong woman. She used to be a sea captain, and now she's my boss, and she's just fantastic. But she said, I really want them so that I can move them. So 50 pounds is about the limit. So.
Gotcha. Got you. Hey, I have one final thought that I've got, and I'm going to ask each of you guys, because Rich, you just mentioned this Denon, you think it is, has AM, FM, Bluetooth, and other stuff in it, and it made me think, who's going to come up with the first rack mount off-air tuner that has AES-67 audio over IP coming out the back of it? Wouldn't that be
kind
of and not hard to do now? Not hard to do. Who's going to come up with? I mean, would that be Rolls, or would Innovonics might come out with that? Seems like a natural for them.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah. For now, I'm excited. I mean, I know people, you know, the quality of Bluetooth isn't maybe what you want, but I'm really excited because I found a Bluetooth dongle that fits into an XLR jack.
What?
Yeah. It's I want to say it's Switchcraft. So it's an
XLR. Yes, it's Switchcraft.
Yeah, it's XLR with Bluetooth, but bonus, if you have phantom power, then it just stays powered. The Bluetooth thing stays powered with phantom power, so no battery. And, you know, so what that would be good is in a new studio is if I had a contributor, somebody come in, and they had something on their phone, would just say, well, just pair it to this thing, and we'll play right off your phone. No wires, no cables. Oh, I don't have the lightning adapter. Oh, I don't have this. Oh, I don't have the USB-C. Oh, my God, I don't have this. You just, you know, pair it with Bluetooth and done.
Does anybody yet make a professional that may be run by a 9-volt battery or a couple of AA's Bluetooth transceiver that would plug into the bottom of your reporting microphone, and it has a little earphone jack in the bottom of it? So you're totally wireless. Sure, it may only be 10, 20, 30 feet at the most, but your Bluetooth back to maybe your iPhone.
Audio has a bunch of that stuff, doesn't it, Chris?
I don't know.
I think JK Audio may have something similar to that. It was someone was talking about that at PREC. Oh, shoot, I'm trying to remember.
Like a belt, they had a belt pack or something.
There is somebody. I think there is somebody that has something like that.
Okay.
But I'm finding this stuff is happening all the time. JK Audio, Blue Driver, Switchcraft. I mean, everybody's starting to get into that space. And the thing that's really cool about it is kind of ubiquitous for now. I know, it's like modems or something. But, you know, it's getting there. And I'm excited. I'll be honest. I'll be 67 next month, and I'm just having a ball. There's so much stuff to learn. It's like every day I go, oh, that is like so cool. I never saw that before. I bet this would work with us. We can make this go with that. And, you know, for a kid who never finished college, I feel pretty happy.
Unfortunately, we have got to run. But, Rich, my last comment to that is that maybe it takes all the experience that a guy like you has to start seeing how all these things could fit together. So it takes experience and an open mind to bring these technologies together and put them in use. And with that, we got to go. Suncast has got to run. We got to run. Chris Tobin, thanks so much for being here. Rich Parker, thank you for being here as well. Appreciate you. And our show, Radio Tech, this was episode 447. We're going to be back next week with Mark Persons, and the week after that with Jorge Garza, all coming up soon. Thanks a lot to Suncast, our producer. Thanks also to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.